Hi, you're listening to Petri.com's MJF Chat Show. I am Mary Jo Foley, aka your Petri.com community magnet, and I am here to interview tech industry experts about various topics that you, our readers and listeners, want to know about. Today's MJF Chat is going to be all about the comeback of handheld PCs. And my special guest today is Mike Halsey, a Windows Experience MVP, Windows book author, and course creator. Welcome, Mike. Thanks for doing this chat.
Hi. It's great to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. Our original plan was for Mike to do this chat while he was in Seattle for the MVP Summit this week. But sadly, due to the COVID-19 worries, Mike is not in Seattle, and the MVP Summit is a virtual-only event this time. But I'm still glad we get to do this, even if it's across the pond.
I'm unfortunately stuck in the middle of the French countryside with a case of wine.
That sounds terrible.
It's horrible, but I'll suffer through it.
Good. So let's talk a little about the history of handheld PCs, because I remember not that long ago writing quite a few stories about UMPCs. I actually thought at the time this might be my ideal form factor because I really care a lot about portability and PC usage. But as I recall, the battery life maybe wasn't so great and they never really took off. So I'm curious why you think UMPCs failed. Do you think it was that they were ahead of their time or not a good idea, not well built? Like what's your assessment now in hindsight?
Well, you have to consider that a lot of these were on the market before we had mobile internet. A lack of mobile internet, when people were discovering the internet and they were starting to do things online, having a portable device that couldn't connect to the internet was just a killer. Mm. For me, there's also, I think, a manufacturing reason why devices such as the Scion Series 5 and the Nokia Communicator and whatnot, and BlackBerrys as well, didn't stand the test of time. And it's because manufacturers, and this is my opinion, I've got no evidence of this, but it's cheaper for manufacturers to create handheld devices where the keyboard is done in software. So there's a bigger profit margin to be made. So there was more incentive for mobile device manufacturers to make smartphones and jump on the iPhone bandwagon than there was to create devices with physical keyboards that are much more expensive and have to be configured for each individual country and market that you sell them in.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah, my very first quote smartphone was an LG device that had a physical keyboard, and I love that thing. I was like, I can never type on glass. I need the physical keyboard. But of course, I adjusted over time. But yeah, I loved it. I loved having
it. We all do. But eventually, I reached a point with, you know, myself where I just couldn't cope with autocorrect anymore. So when these devices with physical keyboards started to reappear, I mean, I've got three of them now, three different ones. And I just love them to bits. But there's lots of other reasons, you know, why. I think there's a lot of reasons why these things are making a comeback.
Okay, so I want you to talk about these devices that you just referred to. I believe you're talking about the Gemini PDA, right?
Yeah, I've got three. I own the Gemini PDA, which is designed by the guy who created the Scion Series 5 back in the 90s, which was hugely popular. And it's got the same physical keyboard. It's got really good travel on it. And I also own the Cosmo Communicator, which is from the same company. They're both made by a British company called Planet Computers, based in London. And the Cosmo is supposed to be sort of the spiritual successor to the Nokia Communicator, which was very popular. Mm-hmm. And that takes the Gemini and it adds a keyboard backlight and an external screen. But I've also got another device, also by a British company. It's interesting that it's the Brits that are kind of leading the way on this, called a Pro One from a company called FX Tech, which is kind of like a pop-up screen with a small sort of, you know, that like bubble keyboard that you'd get. And that's a, you know, a really interesting device as well. But also in this category, you've got other, I wouldn't describe them as mobile devices, but you've got things like the GPD Pocket range, which have proven very popular as well because of their size and portability and power. And also in the case of those, the fact that they run Windows.
The Gemini and the Cosmos don't run Windows, or do they?
No, it would be brilliant if they did. But I think that's, it's more a case of, because they run ARM processors in order to make sure that they have, you know, good battery life and, you know, and good features, that Windows on ARM is just not at that stage yet where it's ready.
Right. So what do you like about these? I mean, I understand the portability aspect and the weight and the fact that you could just kind of throw them in your pocket and go. As you know, because I harp on it so much, I'm a big lappability focused person, but that's more for like a laptop for me. And I really want to have a device that's much smaller, but that's still very usable. Do you think these things like the Gemini and the Cosmos will ever gain any traction, like real substantial traction?
In some markets, I can see these things becoming more and more popular. Whether they'll, you know, ever become what we would call truly mainstream, I have no idea. Probably not.
Yeah.
But there are some markets. For example, programmers. It's useful for program. You can't program on a touch screen.
Right.
You can't do that on a, you know, on an on-screen keyboard. Yeah. System administrators also find it useful because they've got to do programming. I've heard from system administrators who bought the Gemini, firstly because all of these devices can dual boot with Linux. And they could carry it around all the time. They could monitor data centers and other systems, and they didn't have to permanently have a laptop with them at long last. So there are advantages. I mean, for me, I have never liked on-screen keyboards. From the very first time I saw the original iPhone, I just took an instant dislike to the on-screen keyboard. I'm an old-fashioned guy. I like the, you know, I like the tactile experience. And also, if you're typing a long email or a long message, I mean, I'm an author and a writer. Right. I write a lot. You can't write. You know, the Gemini, the Cosmo, and the FX Tech are brilliant, but you'd never write a book on one. Let alone a, you know, but you can write a long email.
Right.
So it's better for that.
Okay. What's the price range of these kinds of devices?
At the moment, the ones that are on the market are around about the sort of $600 mark.
Okay.
So there's some variation in that.
They're cheaper than a lot of smartphones, basically.
They're cheaper than the high-end smartphones, but you're not getting, with any of these things, you are getting a mobile productivity device. You are not buying a high-end camera. None of them will come with sort of like, you know, the Cosmo's got a Samsung camera in it, but it's certainly not the sort of thing that you'd see, you know, in the latest Galaxy or Note devices.
Yeah. So given you just brought up camera, let's talk about what Microsoft's doing in this space now, because for a while they had just kind of abandoned this space. There was talk and a lot of rumors about Andromeda, which was going to be basically the Surface phone, right? It was going to be a Windows-based device that was as small as a phone. And then Microsoft tabled that. But instead, they came out with the Duo, which is going to be launching sometime this year, a dual screen Android-based device. What's your initial impression of the Duo from everything you've read and seen so far?
Well, we've had a lot of time now to think about the Duo and the Neo. I love the flip over keyboard on the Neo. I think that could make that device very popular indeed.
The Wonderbar thing. Yep.
Yeah. Flip over hardware keyboard. Yeah. As far as the Duo goes, initially, my initial reaction was that this was a product looking for a market. But this is what Microsoft do with Surface devices. I've met Panos Panay at the MVP Summit a few years back, and he was very clear that Microsoft with service devices like to create new markets, so like to push the boundaries. And if you look at, I was very skeptical about the new folding phones like the Samsung Fold and other ones. But if you actually look at photos and videos of how people are using these devices, they are using them like mini laptops. So I can actually see people using the Duo in the same way, bearing in mind that Microsoft's focus has been on services and productivity now. So unless you're doing something particularly demanding or you need to use Access or Microsoft Project or something, you can do what you need to do on an Android device or an iOS device. So I can see people using the Duo like a mini laptop and having the on-screen keyboard in on one screen, perhaps with a little toolbar at the top of it. And it'll be interesting to see what modifications Microsoft make to Android, you know, with Google's help, because obviously they're working very closely to enable additional functionality such as toolbars and the like. So I think it could, it's got the potential to be very, very useful for people.
Are there, when you think about these kind of devices, especially the Android-based Duo, do you have like a checklist in your mind where you say it's got to have this, this, and this to be successful? And the reason I'm asking you that is one of our readers, Alessandro Anafuos, said, do we really think the Duo is not going to have NFC or Qi charging? So I'm curious what you think must be there for this to take off and what matters less.
Personally, I'm a huge fan of wireless charging, but it does have limitations. It, firstly, it makes devices fatter, and if it doesn't make devices fatter, it can result in them having less battery in them. And it also is, it's not as quick to charge. We've got some very quick charging technologies now. So I can see why, even though wireless charging would be desirable in these devices, it's not in any of them. And frankly, I wouldn't expect the Duo to support wireless charging because it is incredibly thin anyway. And on the Duo, you'd have to put a wireless charger in on both sides of it because, you know, how else do you know, which way down you're going to put it?
That's true.
NFC is, personally, I see NFC as more of a consumer technology and the Duo as more of a business device because NFC is mostly used for mobile payments. So if NFC wasn't in the Duo, then I wouldn't be surprised at that either, to be honest.
Do you think the camera is going to matter in the Duo? Because here's my thinking. I don't think they're going to have a great camera setup, at least initially on this device. And that's just my personal take based on kind of hints they've dropped. But does it matter that much? You know, all of us are calling this a phone, but Microsoft doesn't want us to think about it as a phone. They want us to think about it as a, like a mini dual screen organizer kind of thing. So if it doesn't have a great camera, do you think people will still buy it and will they care?
It's quite likely that for a while, at least, the people who own the who buy the Duo, and I'm almost certainly going to get one myself. That it's quite likely that they that this will not be their only mobile device. That this will be a professional device, and that they will also have a smartphone. In the majority of cases, I see that being the majority of Duo owners. It won't be their only device, so I don't think it matters really in that regard. To be perfectly honest, if you ask my opinion, if there were fewer people taking photographs in the world of their lunch, then or their cat, then you know I think the world might be a slightly better place.
Hey, I resemble that remark. I take a lot of pictures of my cat.
I know, but Sirachi is, you know, is a He's very a special boy. Cat.
He is.
Celebrity.
He is. You know, the part about carrying more than one device is what I wonder about, right? Because over the years, people always say, is whatever new thing coming onto the market compelling enough to be your third device? Because that's assuming people are carrying a PC of some type or a tablet and a phone. And then you'll have this third kind of device. But, you know, more and more, I'm thinking maybe so few people anymore carry PCs. Like, that number has gone way down, especially among younger people. Maybe we're back to dual devices, but one is something like a Duo and the other one's your smartphone.
Well, millennials are an interesting case here, because we've known for a while now that millennials don't like old communication systems like email, and they much prefer, you know, these are people who have grown up with the app model and not with right. clunky big desktop software. I mean, you know, let's compare. I know you talk about this on Windows Weekly quite a bit, how awful the Outlook Win32 program is compared to the, you know, the web app. Mm-hmm. So millennials prefer these, you know, new methods of communication like Teams and Slack, mm-hmm. but they still want to be able to get things done.
Right.
And I think we've not only have manufacturers hit a problem with that, even mid-range smartphones now look and operate and have the same stuff in them as the high-end smartphones, but I think we've hit a limit of what you can actually do with a smartphone, which is why these devices exist and why Microsoft have created the Duo and why the Gemini and the Cosmo and the Pro One all exist. Because people have got, we've got ubiquitous internet. We have internet wherever we go. People can get stuff done. And it's not like they're being forced to get it done by their employer, but people actually want to be able to do things. So if you can have a device that's as powerful in your pocket as a desktop PC was only a few years ago, but that can do allow you to do more than a smartphone, mm-hmm. then I can see that being very popular. And millennials, these people who would probably never have heard of a Scion Series 3 mm-hmm. or a Nokia communicator, they might not even ever have heard of a BlackBerry, mm-hmm. but they if they're looking for something that will help them get more done, then these are exactly the sort of devices that they'll be drawn to.
Okay. What do you think about foldables versus dual screen? I mean, Microsoft's trying to make a case that having two screens with a gutter between them actually will make you more productive than having a single screen.
I used to, in the house I used to have, where I lived in the UK until last year, there's a wooden pillar in the middle of the living room, which mm-hmm. When I was sat at my computer in the living room and I was watching TV, the wooden pillar would frequently be in the middle of the TV screen. And I can assure you, it didn't make my viewing experience any easier. That said, I think Microsoft are doing it the right way. Foldable screens are in their infancy. There's so many problems with them. You can't fold glass.
Right.
At least, you know.
Not well, so, anyway.
Yeah, certainly not well. Mm-hmm. So I think Microsoft are taking the right approach, because Samsung have got an enormous amount of, I mean, if you consider the size of Microsoft as a company and then you compare them to Samsung, remember that Samsung don't just do electronics, they sell military vehicles and they've got a shipping company and all sorts. They have a lot of money to throw at R&D and things like this, and also to cover the warranty costs, the inevitable right. warranty costs. So I think Microsoft are doing it the right way. Maybe in 5 years' time, things will have improved, the technology will be better, the screens will be better. They're getting in a lot of practice, and it's good that they're doing that, but Microsoft are doing it the right way now.
Do you consider the Surface Go and the Surface Neo that's coming later this year to be handheld PCs? And what do you think about those as something cool and new in the category?
I had a Surface Go.
Yep, me
and
too.
I used it for watching TV in my office. Mm-hmm. Because it was perfect because of the kickstand. You could also put things like the GPD Pocket into this category. Are they really handhelds?
Right.
I think the definition of a handheld is, can you use it whilst walking down the street? And for things like that, and for, you know, an iPad with a keyboard, no, you can't use these things walking down the street. So I would describe them as ultra mobile, you know, this UMPC thing. I would describe them as ultra mobile just because of the convenience of you know, a woman can throw one in a handbag, and it's, you know, and it's a good size for that. Lots of people have to carry laptops around with them and really hate the fact that they have to do that.
Right.
So there's, you know, there's a category that was basically, I think, invented by the 10-inch iPad. That is useful, but no, it's a different category to a proper handheld.
Yeah, I really was excited about the Go when I first got one because I thought, okay, this is perfect. I can put it in my bag. I can take it on the road. If I have to type a quick blog post, I'll be able to do that. But then when I actually tried to do that, the keyboard was just a little too small and a little too tight. And I made so many errors. I said, you know what? It's good for like a one-line answer on an email, but not really for a computing experience in a mobile setting for me.
Yeah, and you'll get this with the, you know, with the Gemini and the Cosmic Communicator as well. That keyboard's even smaller still.
Right.
And no matter how well designed they are, you know, you're not going to write a really long article on it. You'll do that. No. You'll do that on a device with a proper keyboard.
Right.
So each of these things have their uses. For example, you might say let's say you're going off to to build or ignite,
right,
if they ever happen, and and you don't want to be traveling heavy. You don't want to be taking too much stuff with you. And you might find that one of these handhelds can replace your laptop and your phone on that trip. So I can see people having handhelds and having a Duo, but not using it all the time, not using it day to day, using it, having a specific use case for it and saying, well, you know, this is my device. I a couple of years ago when I went to the MVP Summit in Redmond, I only took my Gemini and I found that, you know, I could do on it everything I needed to do. It might have been a bit tight sometimes, but you know, that was actually the MVP Summit when I ended up in intensive care with pneumonia. So that created some challenges because I had to book it extra flights back afterwards because you know, so and find more hotels. So let's say it could be challenging, but it can be done.
Okay. And you're living proof. what we haven't talked about is pens and how much you think pens will and won't figure into the whole handheld PC equation.
Pens are interesting because they're not my preferred way of working, but they have been. Samsung have made them hugely popular. Mm-hmm. Microsoft have made them really work on larger devices, on Surface devices, and you know, even Apple, who under Steve Jobs were never going to adopt a pen, have a pen. Mm-hmm. So I think you can't use them on some devices. I can see a pen possibly being a little bit fiddly to use on a Surface Duo, just because of the size of the device when it's open, possibly being a little fiddly. But when you think, if you think back to the 90s and we had the Palm Pilot and the compact, the iPack, then with a Duo in its sort of single screen mode, folded back, then yeah, I can see that working every bit as well as it does on a Samsung Galaxy Note.
Yeah, I'm also not a big pen user, but one of my bosses loved, I think it was called the Palm Fold or something, that had a pen and swore by it. So I know it just depends on your workflow, I think, pretty much.
Yeah, but the great thing is that because the costs of these devices and the cost of the components, and crucially the cost of manufacturing, has been dropping quite substantially, I think, over the last 5 years, that we can now have more choice.
Right.
And I think this is just fantastic for the market overall, that there's lots of different types of device now to give people that choice, which when you think about it, for a long, long time, we didn't have at all.
True. All right. Put your crystal ball in front of you where you're sitting. What kinds of handhelds do you think we're going to see in the next year or two that we don't know about yet? Any predictions of like form factor, size, type of material, anything that you wish for or that you think actually could materialize that we haven't seen?
I think it's more likely that over the next few years, over the next couple of years anyway, we'll see an evolution of what we've already got rather than a revolution. Mm-hmm. I'm always interested to watch Lenovo in this space, mm-hmm. because they really, really innovate. I mean, you know, Microsoft have done some fantastic innovation with the Surface range, and Samsung have done some great innovation, but when it comes to the people at the, you know, at the top of the tree for this, then the small form factor devices that Lenovo have come out with are very interesting indeed. So they'll be interesting to watch. If somebody's going to do it first, it's probably going to be them.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. They are not afraid to take risks, and probably like you said before, if you have the manufacturing capacity and the diversified portfolio, you're more open to just seeing what sticks, right?
Yeah, no, not everything that Lenovo have released has worked, but right. some of them work really well. Mm-hmm. And it's just great to see, you know, companies that aren't afraid to release products that other people would call niche.
Yes, agree. Well, Mike, we are out of time, but thank you so much for doing this. It was really fun, and I really appreciate your time and your insights.
Thank you very much.
For everyone else listening to this podcast, all you MJF chat readers and listeners, I'll be posting more information soon on Petri about who my next guest will be. Once you see that, you can submit questions on Twitter directly for that guest. In the meantime, if you know of anyone else or even yourself who might make a good guest for one of these chats, please don't hesitate to drop me a note. All my contact information is available on petri.com. Thank you very much.